My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned. Joining us from Chicago is author, activist, and historian, Chris Mann. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us, and in particular because we're coming up on the July 4th holiday, and for many people this means picnics and fireworks and parades. But what we're really celebrating is something very, very important. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I think you're exactly right that we sometimes forget that what we're celebrating is the victory of a revolution. In this country, there's a tendency, I think, by the powers that be to portray a revolutionary as being some kind of wild-eyed fanatic and revolutions as being some sort of unnatural thing. And so I think it's very important for us to remember that this country was born in revolution, and that's really what we're celebrating on July 4th. There's certainly nothing wrong with getting an extra day off, and I think we're all looking forward to that. But I think it is worth remembering that on July 4th, 1776, what happened was that the Second Continental Congress formally adopted the draft written by Thomas Jefferson of the Declaration of Independence. And at that point, it declared that a revolution that was already underway, that revolution's purpose, that struggle's purpose, was complete independence of what were then 13 separate colonies. And the Declaration said that these United Colonies, as it put it, are and of right ought to be free and independent states, and that all political connection between them and Great Britain was totally dissolved.
Well, you bring up, you know, the seminal point here that what we're celebrating is a great change in the consciousness of what was happening with people in that time. And, you know, it seems to me that very often, Chris, that it's put forth, though, that it was sort of a monolithic cause to the American Revolution. But my own study of history shows very often that there are many factors going on. You know, what is it that actually caused the American Revolution?
Well, there were several factors. I think certainly one important factor is the profound changes that were going on inside of the British Empire after the French and Indian War. Keep in mind that you had, with the establishment of English colonies in the New World, the people who came to these colonies at first were very, very loyal to Britain. They were essentially establishing British rule someplace else, so of course they were loyal. But what happened is, over a period of time, their loyalty becomes more and more strained, and this took place particularly after the war fought between France and England between 1756 and 1763, which ends with a British victory, and Canada becomes controlled by Britain at that point. And so what happens is the British government moves to clamp down on the people of the 13 colonies. The government forbids them from moving west of the Appalachian Mountains. It begins to tax them very severely, and people become very outraged at this. And as a result, you have a whole series of protests which ultimately culminate in the revolution. At the same time, there's also an intellectual ferment that's going on, and people are beginning to challenge monarchism. Books are being written, and there's an intense intellectual debate that's going on in society. There's also a tremendous growth of population that's taking place in the New World and in Britain itself. What's happening is that the population in Britain is increasing. People are beginning to emigrate to the New World, and even in the New World, they want to move. They want to move westward. There's this tremendous expansion of the population of the New World, where in 1700 there's about 250,000 settlers, and by 1760 there's almost 1.6 million settlers. And you have a situation like the situation in North Carolina, where between 1750 and 1775 the population increased sixfold. So there are these tremendous changes that are going on, and there's tremendous resistance to an economic system where essentially the 13 colonies are appendages of capitalism in Britain, where you have what was called mercantilism, where they are allowed to only to import and export to and from Britain.
We're talking with Chris Mahon, author, writer, activist, historian, and our guest today on Full Logic Reverse. We're talking about the American Revolution. Chris, I'm sitting here thinking about all of these various forces that are going back and forth, and how did the leaders organize to fight this revolution and to win it?
Well, you had many different forms of organization. You had merchants, you had some of the very wealthiest people in the society who organized things like, for instance, the Stamp Act Congress of 1765. You had organizations like the Sons of Liberty and the Daughters of Liberty that were formed, and they had a very considerable organization to the point that, for instance, in the famous incident involving the Boston Tea Party, not only did they throw the tea in Boston Harbor, 342 chests of tea into Boston Harbor, but they stopped the importation of any tea at that point at any port along the eastern part of North America. So that obviously took a great deal of organization. You had crowds that were formed, and in some cases they were controlled by political figures. Often these were made up of unemployed people, low-income people, people who did not have full rights in the society, but they were willing to go out and demonstrate and even to ransack the homes of, for instance, the colonial governors or people who were responsible for enforcing things like the Stamp Act and the tea tax. So there was a great deal of organization. There was a great deal of ferment.
Well, it certainly seems that there was a tremendous amount of direct action going on as well.
Yes, there was. And this included runaway slaves. It included, for instance, Crispus Attucks, who was the first man to die in the American Revolution. It included a lot of different people at different levels of the society. And at a certain point, it did become necessary for the leaders to explain their motives to the mass of people, and they gave speeches, and certainly a very important role is played by a pamphlet which was written in 1776 called Common Sense by Thomas Paine.
I'd like to get to that in just a moment. Are you ready to take a phone call, Chris?
Certainly.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Mahon, I would like to ask you to take a look at the state of the state with regard to the original intentions, as Robert Bork says, the original intent of the drafters of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, and specifically with regard the Equal Representation Clause, and that was one of the reasons that we caused the revolution, equal representation. So what do we have now? Is it essentially any different than it was then? Then we had the robber barons controlling the American colonialists, the slaves, the indentured servants. Now, most of the legislative effort at the federal, state, and local levels comes from the so-called campaign fund bribes, right? It's bribes, alias, also known as campaign fund donations, and the Supreme Court, the highest court of the land, has said that it's not bribery, it's an extension of freedom of speech.
Let me go ahead and let Chris attempt to answer that. Chris, I guess what I heard out of that is, are we really in any better shape now, some 200-plus years, 223 or whatever it is, since the American Revolution, are we really in any better shape now than we were then?
I think that's a very good question. I think the spirit of the question is that no, we're not, that we have problems that are every bit as great as the problems in 1776. And I would certainly agree with that, that in the 1930s, people used to talk about what they called economic royalists. And I think that, and they were referring to the capitalists of that period. And it seems to me that what happened in the American Revolution of the 1770s was that we got rid of the royalists of one kind in this country. We kicked the royal family of Great Britain, which of course still exists, we kicked them out of this country. But we didn't end the rule of exploiters. We didn't end the rule of an elite. It was simply transferred to another elite. Control of the society was simply transferred to another elite. And that's why you have the kind of problems which the caller alluded to. And I certainly agree with the spirit of what he was saying. There's a really striking passage in the Declaration of Independence that I think is worth quoting on this issue. At that time, to justify what they were doing, the writers, the signers of the Declaration of Independence said, and I quote, "Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security." Now, it seems to me that there was not only a situation in 1776 when a government long established showed that it had evinced a design to establish an absolute despotism, but in fact we have the same situation today. We can see that in things like the Three Strikes Laws. We can see that in a situation where someone in California was sentenced to 25 years to life for stealing a piece of pizza. We can see that in, as the caller alluded to, many of the decisions of the United States Supreme Court, a design to establish a police state in this country. So certainly if it was their right in 1776 to make a revolution, I would submit it's our right today to do so.
This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. We're talking with Chris Mahan, writer, activist, and historian. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. Chris, there's a couple of things that come through my mind when you're speaking, and I guess one of them is that, you know, we hear a lot of people, and they talk about, oh, the Constitution, and they talk about, oh, the Declaration of Independence, and all of this stuff. Very often, they sort of leave out the passage that you just read. You know, they don't seem to want to talk about that one so much.
True.
Yeah. The other thing is that, you know, I'm thinking about how you get people to begin to frame things in a different paradigm, and perhaps in a minute we can talk about Thomas Paine and what vision he tried to express. But are you ready to take another phone call?
Certainly.
Caller, you're live on the air.
I was just calling to get your guest's comment on the background that he was painting to the American Revolution being the French and Indian War and the resistance the basis for the resistance of England to settlement beyond the Appalachians, and that was to secure peace with Native American tribes. There were treaties with Great Britain to restrict settlement within that sphere for that purpose, and of course also to control trade with those tribes. But it was one of the ironies of history is that it was perhaps in the best interests of Native people to support Great Britain in the Revolutionary War, and referring to Thomas Paine, he was part of a delegation to treat with the Delaware Indians and related tribes to try and convince them to side with the Americans against the British in the Revolutionary War. And under discussion at that time was the possible creation of a 14th Native American colony or state, which of course never came to pass. But I'd like your guest comment on that perspective.
Thank you for calling in.
On the caller's point, I think he makes a very good point that certainly it's true historically that one of the reasons that Britain barred settlement west of the Appalachian Mountains was that it did not want to have any more wars, which it would then be responsible for. I mean, if people from the colonies, who were after all British at that point, got into an armed conflict with either Native Americans or any European trappers or explorers, that could end up leading to another European war, which Britain would have to fight. And the French and Indian War had cost Britain £82 million, so they didn't want to go through it again. It's certainly true, and it is a good point that it is one of the ironies of history that part of the reason that the people of the 13 colonies rose up against British rule was so that the colonies could expand westward. And that expansion westward did lead to genocide against Native Americans. There's no question about that. There is a real duality to the American Revolution of the 1770s. Now, on the one hand, you had people who were involved in that revolution, and I think Thomas Paine is a very good example, who were sincerely morally opposed to national oppression, to monarchism, and who spoke out against it, and who painted a vision of a world, a country, the United States, an independent country in North America that could abolish monarchism and any trace of monarchism, and in that sense could be an example to the rest of the world. And I think if you read Common Sense, that Thomas Paine clearly was sincere in those views. In convincing the people of that time of that possibility, of the rightness of that course of action, one of the things that did take place is that an independent country was established, and it proceeded to expand westward, and that had the results that it had, the terrible results that it had for Native Americans. And that's part of the duality of the United States. You can even see that in the Declaration of Independence. In addition to the passage that I quoted, there is another passage denouncing King George III that talks about he has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers. And these are the words of the Declaration of Independence. I'm quoting exactly here, quote, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions, end quote. Those are Thomas Jefferson's words. Of course, they are not mine. But that, I think, will give you an example of the duality of the Declaration of Independence and of the revolution of that time. And I think that the challenge for us today is to unite with the ideals that Thomas Paine put forward in Common Sense, the idea of a country without any vestige of royalism, whether social or the economic royalism that the first caller referred to, but without the other side of the American Revolution.
Well, you know, there are two things that are really going through my mind right now, Chris, and one of them, of course, is Paine's vision of a world without monarchs, a world without royalty, was in many respects a very, very quote-unquote radical viewpoint at that time, and that there were people, probably many people, who could not or would not have even considered such a thing as a result of their lives. I mean, correct?
That's certainly true. It took the introduction of new ideas from without to shake people up. Someone had to dream the dream first. And you look at today, I mean, Look at Britain, where we just had another royal wedding a few days ago. And a few days after that, the pretender to the French throne died in Paris, and the question became, who is the next person who, if they ever reestablish the French monarchy, will be the heir to the French throne? We don't discuss those things here. We don't discuss who the pretender to the throne of the United States is, precisely because the side of the revolution, which was against royalism, against monarchism, was so radical.
Well, I mean, without making light of the very, very important thing that you thought, he says that the pretender to the throne of the United States, all of a sudden, George W. Bush and Al Gore's name went right through my head, but that's a whole different topic. The other thing, Chris, that, you know, I'm thinking about, I remember you told me the story about Captain Mark Starling, and I was thinking about that when you're talking about the duality of the American Revolution, and if I have it wrong, tell me, but as I remember, I mean, the sort of encapsulized version of Mark Starling's story, who's a black man, runaway slave, who was a valiant Navy captain who fought on behalf of the revolution, and when it was all over, they sold him back into slavery.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing, but it really shows, you know, the duality and the competing forces that were happening back then. Mm-hmm. Chris, what does all of this mean for us today? I mean, you know, we're coming up on this holiday. People are, you know, going to ideally, or at least hopefully, be thinking about what they're celebrating. I mean, how does this relate to us today?
Well, I think the challenge for us today is to unite with what was good in the revolution and to stand on it. And again, to go back to that first passage that I quoted about when a government has evinced a design to establish an absolute despotism, the Declaration says it is people's right, but then it says it is their duty to throw off such government and to establish new relations among people. And I think that has something important to say to us today, that we see a situation today where 1% of the population of this country controls 42% of the wealth, where poverty is growing, where we have new productive forces, the computer, the robot, electronics, which are being used by this tiny class of capitalists who rule America. And what could be done with those productive forces, a decent life being provided for everyone, is not being done. And instead, we have greater and greater wealth accumulating at one pole of society and greater misery at the other. And so I think for people who care about the country, we have, as the Declaration says, a duty to change things. And what we need is a new America. We need a new economic foundation for the country. And in order to get that, I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to shake people up. Those of us who care are going to have to talk to our co-workers, our neighbors, our community groups. We're going to have to publish articles and newspapers. And that's what I'm involved in. I'm a member of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, and we're about the business of agitation and propaganda, standing on this tradition that was established by Tom Paine and his pamphlet Common Sense. And what we want to do is shake people up about the situation. And I would just urge people to help us in that effort. And if they want to contact us, there's a phone number that I can give you where they can reach us.
Please give the phone number.
Okay. You can reach the League of Revolutionaries for a New America at 1-800-691-6888. Or you could write to us at Post Office Box 3524, Chicago, Illinois, 60654.
Can you give the number one more time, Chris, for those people who were reaching for a pen and paper?
Certainly. I know how that goes.
You bet.
That's 1-800-691-6888.
Chris Mahan, author, activist, historian, thank you for being with us today to talk about the American Revolution. And perhaps when our listeners are getting ready to celebrate the 4th of July, they may remember some of the things that you shared with us today about what it is we're celebrating and what it means to us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.